Welcome to the 291st episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are reviewing Patrick's weekend predictions, a look back at conference championship weekend in college football, a look back at week 14 action in the NFL, a look back at the last week in college basketball, and let's just do another look back to the NBA and its action over the last week. With all that on hand, let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com. We will start in college football, where Patrick went 2-2 with his weekend predictions. Moving to the NFL, Patrick went 2-2 with his weekend predictions. In the NBA, Patrick went 2-2 with his weekend predictions. And in college basketball, Patrick went 1-3 with his weekend predictions. That made him 7-9 this week, brings him to a 1,210-760 overall record. Still a 61.4% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, obviously it wasn't as good as past weeks had been. I had been doing very, very well. But, you know, I think overall a lot of these games were really, really close, and I definitely could have done a little bit better if just a few bounces had gone my way. Not really too shocked that some of these games didn't go my way. Starting in college football, Arizona State beat Iowa State 45-19. We'll talk about all these games later, so I actually won't continue with the rest of the scores, but I got the Arizona State game right. Georgia beat Texas in overtime. I got that wrong. Oregon beat Penn State, which I got right. And then Clemson beat SMU, which I got wrong, but all the games I lost were three-point games, so I don't really feel too bad about that. In the NFL, pretty much the same story there. Well, three of the four games I predicted in general were close. The close loss that I took was the Rams beating the Bills. Didn't really see that one coming even as a Rams fan, but happy with that result, honestly. And then the Seahawks beat the Cardinals 30-18, which I also lost. But again, close-ish game there, and didn't expect Seahawks to go on the road and pull off that upset, although I thought that game would be close. And then the Lions beat the Packers 34-31, which I got right, and the Chiefs beat the Chargers 19-17, which I got right. In the NBA, it's always a toss-up every week, and then there was some, you know, there's always some injury information that comes in later. I was surprised I didn't get the Magic game wrong, because between the time that I predicted their game and the time of the game against the Suns, I believe Franz Wagner got injured. Obviously would have picked the Suns, probably, if I had known that he was going to be out for that game, but the Magic won anyway. That was a win for me. The Celtics beat the Bucks 111-105, which was another win for me, and then the Timberwolves beat the Warriors, which was a loss. And the Rockets beat the Clippers 117-106, which was another loss for me. But both of those games, very, very close to that 2-2 result. Not too surprising. In college basketball, Marquette beat Wisconsin 88-74. I predicted that one right, and then all the other ones went wrong. Kentucky beat number 7 Gonzaga 90-89 in overtime. For some reason, on my post, I had Florida instead of Gonzaga. I don't know where that came from. It was Gonzaga, and I still would have picked Kentucky, even if it was against Florida. Or I would have picked Kentucky if it was against Florida, but I would have picked Gonzaga against Kentucky, which is the pick that I meant to pick. And Kentucky did win that game in Seattle in overtime, so that was a big win for them. And then UCLA beat Oregon on the road on a buzzer beater, so that was another big win that I didn't expect to happen, but really was picking between a few close games in the Big Ten, between a ranked team at home and an unranked team on the road, and just didn't know who to pick. In terms of which would be the closest game. And then I picked wrong because I should have just picked the Purdue-Maryland game instead because I was more sure of the outcome, but I chose to pick the better game, and I got burned for it. And then Texas A&M beat Texas Tech 72-67. I had Texas Tech winning that game, although actually later in the week I actually kind of changed my opinion. Someone asked me who I thought was going to win that game, and I said Texas A&M. So kind of funny on that one, but when I looked back and realized that I had predicted it wrong, I didn't think I had picked Texas Tech, but I did. So overall, not feeling too bad about that, and I'll rebound next week, maybe take more time with the predictions, not rush it as much, and hopefully it'll end up better.
All right, well, we'll see if you do better next weekend with your predictions for next weekend. That will be posted on our website on Thursday. Let's now turn our attention to college football with a look back at the significant games from conference championship weekend.
We will start with the Friday games, where number 24 Army beat Tulane 35-14. Tulane favored in this game, even though they were on the road, but Army ends up getting the victory. They are 11-1 on the season now. Obviously still have to play Navy in that game. That's always a week after the season ended. We're seeing how that weird little quirk works with the American Athletic Conference championship game, and then the Army-Navy game the week after, now that Army's in a conference. It's just kind of life as usual, except for that game doesn't count as a conference game, I believe. And then it just basically goes as another game in Army's schedule. That's just a regular game that just happens to be played after they already had played in the conference championship game. But Army, regardless, wins this one, claims the conference championship. Now they'll go on to the Navy game. It'll be interesting to see their level of motivation in that game after they narrowly missed out on the playoff spot and they already have claimed a conference championship game. So what is another regular season game to them? Do they really care? I don't know. But we'll just have to see. Then you have number 10 Boise State, who beat number 20 UNLV 21-7. They played earlier in the season. Boise State won that matchup as well. They played again, and Boise State won once again. So Boise State clearly proving that they're the better team over UNLV, although two very, very strong teams, probably the two best non-power conference teams, excluding Notre Dame, of course. And I firmly believe that. So good for those two teams, both really good seasons. And Boise State, obviously, continuing that in the playoff and UNLV in a bowl game. But then moving on to the Big 12 championship game, like I said earlier, number 15, Arizona State beat number 16, Iowa State, 45-19. Arizona State playing a good game, obviously just kind of came out and dominated Iowa State. They were upset. Iowa State, excuse me, was up 7-3, but after that start to the game, Arizona State really took over for the rest of it, and the Sun Devils never looked back, obviously. Defeated Iowa State pretty easily and claimed their spot in the college football playoff, which we'll be talking about next week, so we won't actually talk about these games at all this week, but obviously these games set up who got in. And speaking of who got in, the conversation centered around number 17 Clemson, who beat number 8 SMU, and everybody was wondering if SMU lost that game, would they drop out? I thought that in a close game, especially, SMU shouldn't drop out. I thought SMU really shouldn't drop out in the first place, and even if they did, I thought it should be South Carolina, not Alabama. That did not end up being the discussion. The discussion was between SMU and Alabama. As we know now, despite Clemson winning 34-31 against number 8 SMU, SMU did still make it to the playoffs anyway. I think that was the right choice. I think especially the way that SMU lost this game, only losing by 3, basically in a toss-up, it required an ACC championship game record 56-yard field goal to beat them after a really strong comeback in the second half. So I really don't think that should have been held against them, especially just because they only played in that extra game because they had a good enough regular season to make the conference championship game. And they were pretty consistent about not really knocking the teams who made the conference championship games down too far in the rankings. And I think they did that across the board, and I'm glad they held that up with SMU as well, rather than just giving it to Alabama just because it's Alabama. But both of those teams will be in the playoff, just like Georgia and Texas, and also like Penn State and Oregon. Georgia and Texas. Georgia beat number 2 Texas 22-19 in overtime. Texas had to settle for a field goal in overtime. Georgia scored a touchdown immediately after the fact, and then Georgia walked away with the victory. Limped away with the victory might be a more appropriate phrase, because Carson Beck not able to finish that game. Well, I guess technically he did hand the ball off at the end of the game. But Gunnar Stockton had to come in and play a lot of the second half because of the fact that Beck got injured at the very end of the first half. And he took over, and honestly, he did a pretty good job. The offense was actually more efficient with Stockton behind under center than it was with Carson Beck. Carson Beck definitely hasn't had his best season, so that's frankly not too surprising. But the Georgia defense really was the story in this game. Holding Texas to field goal after field goal. Texas missed 2 field goals also, which caused this game to be so close in the first place. And they didn't convert in the red zone, which is why Georgia was able to keep it close and eventually bring it to overtime and claim the victory. And then finally, number 1 Oregon beat number 3 Penn State 45-37. The Nittany Lions played well in this game. I really don't think there's anything anybody can fault them for other than the lack of scoring in the third quarter. I guess you could say they didn't score in that quarter, but they put up double digits in every other quarter and had their opportunities to win the game. A very ill-advised shot play called on 2nd and 1 where Drew Aller kind of threw it in a double coverage on really what looked like a play that they just already had decided they were going to throw that ball down the field no matter what happened. That go ball got picked off in double coverage, and that ended up sealing the victory for Oregon. Oregon could not be stopped on the offensive end. But then defensively, against both Penn State and Ohio State and Boise State, they have really, really struggled this season. So that's something to monitor going into the playoff, especially because they're either going to rematch Ohio State in the Rose Bowl or they're going to play against Tennessee in the Rose Bowl, who doesn't really have that strong of an offense, but especially for the playoff teams, maybe one of the weaker offenses in the playoff. But at the same time, they have a lot of big playability, and they can get some explosives on Oregon that could really help out with that matchup. But we don't know what that matchup will be, so it's not really worth talking about for now. We'll have to predict those next week.
All right, let's turn our attention to National Football League action with a review of Week 14.
The Lions beat the Packers to start the week on Thursday Night Football. 34-31 was the score. We talked about it already a little bit on the weekend predictions. But yeah, the Lions and the Packers, two of the elite teams in the NFC, really the top three teams in the NFC North, are kind of the cream of the crop there in that conference. Lions now move to 12-1 and clinch a playoff berth. I think they might have. I don't know if they actually had done that heading into the week, but they definitely did it after this game with their 12th win of the season. And then meanwhile, the Packers at 9-4, haven't clinched a playoff spot yet, obviously, but none of those teams, the Packers, the Lions, and the Vikings, have not lost to anybody but each other pretty much the entire season, at least the last 7 or 8 weeks anyway. So not really going to affect too much there, but the Packers, of course, tried to claim the victory to really, really kind of knock into the home field advantage, see if they could claim the division. But instead, it's looking like they're going to be a tough out as a 5 or a 6 seed in the playoffs, but they'll have to go on the road to get that victory when that time comes. And speaking of that, the Vikings, same situation. They're 11-2. They have the second best record in the league, in the NFC, third best record in the league behind the Chiefs, of course, as well. But at the same time, the Vikings are going to be the 5 seed in the postseason as things stand today, because of the fact that the Lions are 12-1 and they're going to take home field. And just like the college football playoff, when you seed by division or by conference champions, you end up getting some weird playoff matchups when the wildcard teams have better record than the divisional winners. The Vikings, of course, this weekend won 42-21 over the Falcons. This game was tied heading into the fourth quarter. The Vikings led at the half 14-10, but then Falcons came storming back, made it a tie heading into that fourth quarter, like I said, but then the Vikings outscored the Falcons 21-0 in the fourth quarter. They started the fourth quarter in the red zone, to be fair, so you could say that score was maybe more kind of a third quarter drive itself, but then they scored immediately in the fourth quarter, got a few turnovers as well to help out with the cause. And meanwhile, the Falcons, they're still ended in their division. They play in one of the weakest divisions in football, probably the weakest, and as a result of that weakness, they are still going to be in their race, although they did drop out of first place. That's because the Buccaneers went to 7-6 this weekend with a win over the Raiders. They won 28-13. This game also kind of an interesting one. The Bucs started up 14-0, but then were held scoreless over the next two quarters. Raiders made it a 14-10 game at the half, and then a scoreless third quarter for both sides before the Buccaneers got some insurance and eventually won 28-13 behind 14 points in the bookend frames. They got another 14 in the fourth quarter, of course, to win that game. And now it's 7-6. They lead that division, the NFC South, of course. But then, moving on to a different division, new action. It's the 49ers. They beat the Bears 38-13. They only moved to 6-7 on the season, but worth noting, obviously, because we know that that roster is one that is a Super Bowl quality roster if they actually play up to expectations. They obviously haven't so far this season, but it is possible that they do that in the future. So it's always worth monitoring them in a tight NFC wildcard chase or race. And it's also worth monitoring because of the fact that their division is really close as well. The Seahawks currently leading that division now with an 8-5 record on the season. They got a very important win this weekend because they were 7-5. The Cardinals were 6-6. Whoever won that divisional matchup, would take control of the division overall in the NFC West. If the Seahawks won, as they did, they moved to 8-5. And then if the Cardinals had won, both teams would be 7-6, but the Cardinals would have the tiebreaker for now. And the Cardinals obviously dropped this game at home. It's going to be tough. I think they already did lose at Seattle anyway. So that kind of, that's a tough assignment to do. It's not likely to go get that win, and now you don't have home field, the tiebreaker over Seattle if it comes up As the Seahawks have swept the season series against the Cardinals, the Cardinals still have the opportunity to play both the Rams and the Niners to claim those season series. They won the first matchup against both of those teams, so that's worth noting. But Seattle looking strong atop that division at 8-5 currently with that win over the Cardinals as well. The interesting thing to note, though, is that the Rams did beat the Seahawks in Seattle, and then the Seahawks play the Rams last week of the season in LA. So if the Rams can sweep that season series, it's looking like that will decide the division in the Rams' favor. Seahawks have a tough schedule coming up with the Packers and the Vikings and then the Bears before they play the Rams. And the Rams have the 49ers, who I guess you could say might be a tough game. You really don't know what to expect from San Francisco on Thursday Night Football. And then the Jets and then the Cardinals before playing the Seahawks. So a very interesting road coming up for both teams. And speaking of the Rams, if you want to talk about tough games, they played the Bills this week, one of the prime contenders really for the Super Bowl in the entire league. But the Rams won a shootout, 44-42. Josh Allen doing things we have literally never seen before. 3 touchdowns, both on the ground and in the air. That had not been done in a regular season game all time. There was one who did it in a playoff game, I think in 1950. But at the same time, a great performance by him, but not enough from his team overall. They just could not stop the Rams. Puka Nacua had a crazy good game in this one. Kyron Williams was pretty efficient on the ground as well. Cooper Kupp also had a pretty good game. Not as good of a game as Puka had, but at the same time, a really, really good game. And the Rams, of course, won 44-42, won that shootout. And, you know, if the Rams could beat the Bills at home, you can't really call the 49ers and the Jets and the Cardinals tough games. Obviously, the Jets, that's not a tough game at all. But the Cardinals game, the 49ers game, you can't call those tough games if this is a team that's going to play like they did this weekend against the Bills, at least on the offensive end. If they play like this on defense, it's going to be hard to beat anybody. But the Rams still did claim that victory, get above 500, but all those teams still outside of the playoff picture, the Rams, the Cardinals, and the 49ers, because of how stacked the NFC is from top to bottom. But moving to the AFC for a second, the Steelers beat the Browns 27-14. Just important to mention because, of course, this was a game without George Pickens. The Steelers move to 10-3 on the season. They lead their division and now have some cushion there too as well. 2 games ahead of Baltimore now that Baltimore had their bye week. And we can officially say that instead of 1.5 games or a half game ahead, it is 2 full games, the lead for Pittsburgh currently at 10-3. Meanwhile, by the way, I should have mentioned the Bills did already clinch their division last weekend. And then the Chiefs clinched it this weekend with their win over the Chargers 19-17 on Sunday Night Football, banking in a field goal to win that game. In the most Chiefs fashion you could, they just don't win big anymore. I don't know where the killer instinct went, but this has kind of been their MO all year long, just kind of hang in games and then hope that they can get a drive at the end, and they pretty much always do. And it happened again this weekend, and they clinched the division over the Chargers as a result. Chargers still one of 4 8-5 teams in the AFC. The Texans are also one of those teams, but they lead their division. And then the other three are the 3 wild cards currently, the Ravens, the Chargers, and the Broncos. Broncos and Ravens, of course, on bye this week. So the Chargers join them at 8-5 in the wild card race, with a lot of teams under them at 6-7, the Colts and the Dolphins, and then also the Bengals at 5-8 as kind of the big contenders there. Speaking of the Bengals, they beat the Cowboys 27-20 on Monday Night Football. That didn't knock the Cowboys out of the playoff race. They're not fully eliminated yet, but they are in 13th in the NFC. And like I said, 3 teams at 6-7 and then 7-6 if you're the Rams in the NFC West. You also have the Falcons sitting at 6-7 in their division, probably more so looking towards that divisional race than a playoff spot through a wild card. But then you have the 2 NFC North teams, the Vikings at 11-2, the Packers at 9-4. Claiming the 5th and the 6th spots. And then, of course, you have the Commanders at 8-5 currently. So between the Commanders, the Rams, Falcons, Cardinals, 49ers, the Cowboys have a lot of upward climbing left to do. And losing that game against the Bengals, failing to move to 6-7 on the season is a big deal. They would have been in a tie with Atlanta, Arizona, and San Francisco for 9th. But instead, they're at 13th, or they're tied for 12th with the Saints, who already beat them this year. And then finally, the Eagles, they beat the Panthers. This game should not have been close, but it was. The Panthers really had a chance to go out and win this one. Xavier Leggett just couldn't quite haul in a catch at the end of the game, and then the Panthers eventually couldn't convert on fourth down, and the Eagles escaped with a 22-16 victory. They need to play a lot cleaner than this if they're going to be a real contender in the NFC, but at the same time, they're 11-2, and they clinched a playoff spot, so they have nothing to complain about just yet. Meanwhile, the Panthers looking a lot better now that Bryce Young is back under center. He looks like a totally different guy than he did in his first year and a half in the NFL, looking more like the guy that came out of Alabama, but couldn't best his, not his former teammate, but his college mate, his alma mater buddy, you could say, Jalen Hurts, and the Eagles offense this weekend. They take home the victory.
All right, let's now change gears and move to basketball action, starting with the most significant college basketball action from last week.
At the start of the week, we had a bunch of unranked upsets all on the same night, I believe. Michigan beat Wisconsin, the number 11 team in the country, 67-64. That kicked off Big Ten conference play. That was actually the first game of the season in the Big Ten, which is pretty fitting that a team would pull off a random upset in the Big Ten. That seems to happen way too often in that conference. Most of the time, though, it's at home. It's a lot of home teams beating ranked teams that are going on the road, but this time it was Michigan, the unranked team, going on the road and beating a Clemson team that had one of the best resumes in the country heading into that game. But Dusty May already has the same amount of wins this season that Juwan Howard did all of last year in Michigan's program war season. A pretty quick turnaround, pretty quick bounce back in Ann Arbor as the Wolverines are now ranked 14th in the country, third highest ranking in the Big Ten behind Purdue and Oregon. Talk more about both of those teams later. But Clemson pulled off a big upset, not the biggest upset of the week at all, because number one went down twice, so definitely not the biggest upset. But Clemson beat number four Kentucky 70-66 in the SEC-ACC Challenge. That was one win that the ACC picked up. I think they ended up only picking up two, though, unfortunately, in the entire bracket, which is just honestly kind of sad. I don't really know what to, well, I do know what to make of it. The SEC is the best conference by far. They're the best conference that I've ever seen in my lifetime, which means at least 20 years. And I really don't think that that's much of an, I don't think that's an understatement. I don't think it's an overstatement. The SEC won this challenge 14-2 overall. Clemson, though, did claim, like I said, one of those victories. So credit to Clemson. And honestly, you could say that the two victories that the ACC did get were important because they actually knocked off number two and number four in the process. Those are two of the better wins you could get. The only other one you could have gotten is over number three, Tennessee. Other than that, number one resides in the Big 12, or did. So you couldn't get a better win. But speaking of the Big 12, the Big East Big 12 Challenge was also in the middle of last week. Villanova beat number 14 Cincinnati 68-60. That was a do-or-die game for Villanova. They obviously have the talent, the metrics like this team in terms of, well, like them in terms of they're better than what their record would indicate and what resume metrics would indicate. But at the same time, you know, this is an average team at best, maybe a tournament team if they really, really pull together for the rest of the season. But this is a good start to doing that. Eric Dixon has played like an All-American contender. If they even get anywhere near the tournament, he will be an All-American. I think he's averaging 25 points per game right now, which is ridiculous. But at the same time, if they don't make the tournament, I don't think you can really put him on that team. But he could be a National Player of the Year contender, though, if they really start to kick it into high gear. But I don't think they will, as has been the case under Kyle Neptune. They tend to have one win like this, but four losses to offset it in the non-conference, which they already have. And then they really just never pick up enough steam in the Big East to really make any serious case to make the NCAA tournament. Speaking of a serious NCAA tournament case, though, before the season, Wake Forest was thought of as maybe the third best ACC team. They were picked third in the ACC preseason poll, a team that many thought would be one of a four or five team or five bid league in the ACC. Wake Forest has not looked the part whatsoever. Number 22 Texas A&M beat them 57-44. No offense whatsoever from the Demon Deacons. That has been a common theme this season. They have had issues scoring all year long. Came back to bite them in this game against a strong Texas A&M team who claimed another victory later in the week that we'll talk about later. But going back to the SEC-ACC Challenge, number 23 Ole Miss beat Louisville 86-63. A big statement victory by the Running Rebels, or by the regular Rebels, actually, not the Running Rebels, that's UNLV, but the regular Rebels. Ole Miss, they beat Louisville very strong on the eye test there. Louisville obviously had, you know, they didn't play well against Tennessee at home, but for the rest of the season had played pretty well. Keyshawn Pryor not available in this game, actually tore his ACL, so he'll be out for the season. So that obviously will affect Louisville going forward. We'll see how they kind of respond to this game. But Ole Miss, with a strong look on the eye test, pulling off a victory by pretty much the same margin that Tennessee did on the road at Louisville earlier in the season. Then you have number 9 Duke. They beat number 2 Auburn 84-78. That was, like I said, the other win in the ACC Challenge. So it really feels like the ACC got some good wins. They did get some big wins. They beat the number 2 and number 4 teams in the country. Unfortunately, out of 16 games, those were their only two victories. So it doesn't mean much in the end. Although Duke does cement itself as a potential one seed. They're knocking on the door if they're not already past that door. And maybe the only thing holding them back currently is their loss to Kentucky at the beginning of the season. Although it's hard to argue that Duke has a worse resume than Kentucky. But at the same time, Kentucky did beat them. So if they're right next to each other, I say now you got to go look at the head-to-head. Maybe later in the season that can change. But for now, Duke kind of on that border of 1 and 2 seed. And speaking of that border between 1 and 2 seed, number 6 Iowa State beat number 5 Marquette 81-70. Hard to say that Marquette got knocked out of the 1 seed, though, at least in my view, with that loss. They were undefeated heading into that, and then they claimed another victory over the weekend that was a big victory, a quad 1 victory over Wisconsin, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But Iowa State needed this win. They didn't cash in on any big victories in Maui. They did get 2 victories, but only over Colorado and Dayton, so not quite as impressive as some of the other teams in the field. And their kind of claim to fame there was that they played Auburn close, who had looked like the number 1 team in the country so far. But at the same time, they're a really good team. They're really, 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 really good at home, and they're going to be a tough out in the Big 12. Definitely a championship contender there in that conference and in the country. And speaking of championship contenders, number 10 Alabama went on the road, beat number 20 North Carolina in the SEC-ACC Challenge, a high-scoring game, and that one Alabama walks away with the victory. Number 25, UConn beat number 15, Baylor, 76-72. UConn finally getting the win to back up the talent on their roster and all the close games they had played in Maui and beyond, but had not been able to cap off this season. They got another one later in the week that I'll talk about. But Mississippi State beat number 18, Pitt, 90-57. If you want to continue on the theme of ACC-SEC Challenge beatdowns, this was one of them. And then the Big Ten got in on the action. Penn State beat number 8 Purdue 81-70, but I want to note that Penn State led this game by 20-plus points most of the game. With about 3 minutes left, Penn State was up 70-something to 50-something, and that's really what this score should have read, not 81-70. Purdue did a lot of work in garbage time to make this look a lot better, and I'm sure the efficiency metrics thought it did as a result. Then, on that same night, I actually don't even have it listed. Actually, it was on Wednesday night before that. Maryland led Ohio State 50-17 at the half and eventually won by a score of 83-59. So that's worth mentioning as well, although neither of those teams are ranked. But Maryland probably should be at this point, although we'll talk about that in a second. But Northwestern beat number 19 Illinois 70-66 in overtime. I said Villanova's win over Cincinnati was a season-saving one. Northwestern's win over Illinois was kind of a tier above that. Not a season-saving win. Northwestern's season wouldn't have been over if they fell to 6-4. But this is definitely one that they can hang their heads on for a while and say, look, this is why we deserve to be in the tournament conversation. We have this big win over Illinois. At least for now, it's one of those wins. They need to get a few more of those, though, by the end of the season if they want to actually make the tournament. But then number 4, Kentucky, went on the road. Technically at a neutral site, but it was in Seattle, so it was basically a road game. At least by location, not by fans. The Kentucky fans showed up and showed out. But Kentucky won 90-89 in overtime. I talked about that in weekend predictions. Marquette beat Wisconsin. I talked about that earlier and in weekend predictions. Number 17, Houston, beat Butler 79-51 in the final game of the Big East Big 12 Challenge. A very, very strong win for Houston to actually come out and put a victory behind their name after all the, you know, the metrics still love this team. The eye test still tells you this team is probably a top 10 team, but they just haven't played like one and it hasn't showed up on the scoreboard. It finally did in this game against probably a tournament level, you know, 10 or 11 seed Butler team as things stand. They just demolished them. And speaking of demolishing, Missouri beat number 1 Kansas 76-67. I said number one went down twice this week. They got court stormed both times, both by Creighton and Missouri. Missouri had a very lackluster resume. They had only played one big game. It was against Memphis, and they lost. They have big games coming up. They play Illinois. Then they start conference play as well. So some big games coming up. But at the same time, they needed to claim a big victory. They got one this weekend with that win over Kansas. Speaking of Maryland, like I said, I would. Number 8, Purdue beat them 83-78, but a really, really close game. Not a game you expect the Terrapins to stay in on the road at Mackey, but they did just that. Number 9, Duke beat Louisville 76-65. Duke having some struggles in this game, going on the road with the young guys. It makes sense that it happened, but Louisville not quite able to close this game out despite leading for, you know, a few possessions in the first half and a decent amount of the game overall. And then UCLA beat number 12, Oregon, 73-71. Dylan Andrews banking in a buzzer-beater three to sink the Ducks' undefeated campaign. It was looking interesting because Oregon could have very easily entered conference play, or the real stretch of conference play, I should say, 13 or 14-0, if they had gotten past this game, because they don't really play anybody before the meat of conference play starts. And then probably the biggest upset of the week in terms of just where did this come from, Arkansas State beat number 16, Memphis, 85-72. Amidst all the action of the Big East Big 12 Challenge, Kansas playing Missouri, SEC, ACC Challenge, some other neutral site games, this happened. Memphis is lucky that most of the country wasn't watching them because this was an embarrassing loss for them. But then in the final two games of the week, all involving Texas teams, number 22, A&M beat Texas Tech 72-67. I should mention that at the same event, Vanderbilt beat TCU. They are an SEC team on the bubble, looking like the SEC could get 14 or 15 teams in the tournament, which is crazy, but also possible. Although one of the teams that's kind of tanking that case currently, it's Texas. They lost at home to number 25 UConn, 76-65. That means UConn claimed two Power Conference victories this week. So maybe Dan Hurley is right about not playing MTs. Maybe they do better when they're just playing one-offs against these Power Conference teams. At least this week, that seemed like the case. UConn rewarded in the rankings as such, and now all of a sudden, the three losses, both for them and for Houston, don't look so bad anymore.
All right, let's continue with basketball, but turn our attention to the NBA.
Starting with the top of the Eastern Conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers leading it 21-4 is their record so far. 7-3 in their last 10. They did lose their last game, but the Celtics still trailing them at 19-5, 1.5 games back, 8-2 in their last 10. Obviously, the Celtics, kind of the contender that everybody wants to talk about, but at the same time, Cavs are still ahead of them. They've beaten them once this year, although the Celtics were shorthanded in that game a few weeks ago. But the Cavs and the Celtics are leading the East, and then right behind them, you got the Orlando Magic at 17-9. They're 8-2 in their last 10 as well. The interesting thing for them is that Paolo Banchero is still out with his oblique strain or oblique tear. And now Franz Wagner dealing with the exact same injury that Paolo is. His came a month and a half later. Paolo's still out, so looks like Franz won't be there until, I don't know, at least the end of January, if you want to go on the same timeline that Paolo Banchero is on. But who knows if he heals faster, we'll see. And who knows how quick Banchero even comes back. We don't know for now. Obviously, he hasn't returned just yet. But they're 4.5 games back there, still in the 3-seed spot for now. They're lucky they built up that cushion, though, because not having your two best players is definitely going to hurt for the month or so that it might last, maybe longer. I don't know how long that injury typically takes to recover from for basketball players. But then you have the Knicks at 15-9. They're 5.5 back at 7-3 in their last 10. One of the few teams that's multiple games above 500 in the East, although now the East has started to get a little bit of depth, you could argue. The Heat now at 12-10 after winning their last three in a row. They're in the 5-seed. The Bucks are 8-2 in their last 10. They're at 12-11 now on the season. They've kind of turned things around there. They did lose to the Celtics over the weekend, as we mentioned in predictions, but still going strong overall. And then the Hawks, they've been playing better recently. They're 6-4 in their last 10. And even though they're in the 7-seed, they are 13-12. They are much better than the team that is in 8th currently. That's the Brooklyn Nets. Despite being 5-5 in their last 10, they are 10-14 on the season. Somehow in position, to host a play-in game. To host a play-in game if they lose to the Hawks, which they definitely would, with a chance to get to the playoffs and get that 8th seed. But for now, They'd be going on the road to play the Hawks first with the Honors to get the 7th seed. But of course, it's way too early to talk about that, only 25 games in the season. But the Pacers, the Bulls, and the Pistons are all tied for the 9 seed. Three really different teams there tied for that position. The Pacers, a team that looked like a young, up-and-coming team heading into the year after what they had done last year, looking like a surging force in the East. And this is a really disappointing season for them. For the Bulls, it's just another year in mediocrity. And then for the Pistons, they're making the rise from the bottom of the barrel all of a sudden to kind of the middle of the pack in the East. So three really different stories in terms of all those teams tied for that 9th spot. Pistons, definitely the happiest that they're there. Pacers upset about it, and the Bulls fans just saying, well, kind of come to expect it at this point. And then you have the Sixers, who will upset that three-way tie and definitely make it so that two of those teams don't make the playoffs by the end of the year, as they have started to finally play some real basketball. They're 7-15 on the season still, which still sucks. But they've won 2 in a row. They're 5-5 in their last 10. I expect them to pick it up even more once Paul George is fully healthy, once Joel Embiid is fully healthy, once Tyrese Maxey is fully healthy, but keep saying that every week. Maybe one day it'll come true. Then you have the Hornets, who are 7-17. They are 13.5 games back, 2-8 in their last 10. The Raptors at 7-18. And then at the very bottom, you have the Washington Wizards, who are 3-19, but they finally snapped their losing streak at 16 games. And wouldn't you know it, of any of the teams they could have done it against, they did it against the Denver Nuggets with Nikola Jokic dropping 56, 15, and 8. I have no idea how that is the game that they won, but credit to Jordan Poole for carrying them in that game. Nearly had 40 points, had like 8 or 9 assists in that game as well. So good for the Wizards for getting on the board with the win, but they're still 3-19. They're still the worst team in the league, and it's not even remotely close. Speaking of the worst team in the league, let's go to the opposite of that, the Thunder. They're one of the best teams in the league. They're at 18-5. In this incredibly deep Western Conference, they are still the number one seed. But they're only 2 games ahead of the Grizzlies. Both teams have won 3 in a row, but the Grizzlies are 9-1 in their last 10 compared to the Thunder's 7-3 record. So the Grizzlies definitely surging in the standings, getting closer, currently in the 2 seed. Then you have the Rockets and the Mavs, both at 16-8 in the 3rd and 4th spots. The Mavs have won 7 games in a row to get all the way up here, starting to play like the championship selves that they were, I guess not championship selves, but conference champion selves that they were last year, of course, tied with the Rockets now for that 3rd seed, and a few games ahead of the Warriors, who are in the 5th spot at 14-9. The Clippers are at 14-11. They're 5 games back despite being 6-4 in their last 10. They have lost their last 2 to drop to the 6th spot. The Nuggets, like I said, lost to the Wizards. Not a good look. They're tied with the Lakers for the 7-8 spots. The Lakers beating the Blazers yesterday without Sunday without LeBron playing. But at the same time, Lakers have not been playing well recently. They're 3-7 in their last 10, and they have the worst point differential in the West outside of the Trailblazers, the Jazz, and the Pelicans. Then you have the Timberwolves and the Suns at 12-11 at the rear of the Western Conference playoff picture. And then, of course, the Spurs and the Kings just on the outside looking in. They both have 12 wins, just like the Nuggets, the Wolves, and the Suns, but they unfortunately have 12 and 13 losses, respectively. The Spurs, with a 12-12 record, they're 6-4 in their last 10, but they're still a half game out. And the Kings, a full game out. They have won 2 in a row, but they're 4-6 in their last 10. Finally, at the bottom of the West, you have the Blazers at 8-16, the Jazz and the Pelicans at 5 wins each. Jazz at 5-18, Pelicans at 5-20. Looking real bad for all those teams between the Portland Trail Blazers, the Jazz, and the Pelicans. Just not a lot of hope there when you look at the other 12 teams ahead of them in the West.
All right, that wraps up our look at NBA action. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, December 17th, where we will look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, have a preview of the college football playoff and the college football bowl season, look at Week 15 action in the NFL, and again, talk about basketball with another weekly review of both NBA and significant games in college basketball action. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including our college football rankings, which actually are no longer posted. We had our last rankings until after the bowl season, so we'll do that after bowl season or maybe even after the playoffs. Patrick's weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted weekly on Wednesdays throughout the season, and his picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted not on his website, as I said before, but on social media. Patrick's handles are at 4thand24 on Twitter and Instagram. Some of the content is on our website, 4thand24.com. And when you're going to those sites, remember that's the number 4, THAND, the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.